and unsurpassed penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to face the truth of Devatatarika's
words. Good morning. And welcome to newer folks. And I want to say, I don't think I'm going to use jargon today particularly, but if I do, if I use some word that you don't understand, please, please ask. And though you're probably asking for half the people in the room. Happy Juneteenth, I guess. It is a happy day. And I had a hard time preparing for this lecture because I just feel so very aware of how much pain we as a country have, how much suffering we've imposed on ourselves by our history of slavery. Of course, particularly on Black people and Native Americans who were enslaved. But it's also a great wound for white people in this country. And what I kept thinking of was something that a great basketball coach named Doc Rivers said. Those of you who follow basketball know that he is a great coach and a great human being. And he said, I think within the last year, he said, and I've seen a video of it, and I think he had tears in his eyes. He said, he's African-American, I should add. He said, I don't know, you know, all these years, we Black people have loved America, but you've never loved us back. You've never loved us back. Our practice includes seeing clearly. Our practice includes putting ourselves, not even putting ourselves, if we can manage it, but being open to the feelings of others and the experience of others, including them. And ideally, not as an act of will, like, now I'm going to walk in the shoes of Doc Rivers. But however it happens, our practice is making that effort to know to the extent we can, with a great deal of humility, of course, what others feel. You know, I always remind myself not to say, I know how you feel. Instead to say, I wonder if you feel, or I imagine you feel, or how do you feel is always good, just asking. And we can put ourselves in the feeling of those feelings of those people that anticipated the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, it was known that that Lincoln was about to do it. And there were gatherings because it was supposed to happen on New Year's Day in 1863. It did happen, but they knew that it was coming. And I think right around midnight, the telegraph wires started. And people were gathered. Frederick Douglass and the abolitionists from the Northeast were gathered. Emerson and Thoreau. I actually have an article about it here, but I don't remember the names. But they were gathered, and there were people in New York were gathered, and so on. expecting this great proclamation of freedom. And our practice includes being willing to see everything. And so that means remembering that that proclamation was to some extent a political act in order to encourage Black slaves in the South to rise up and join the Union cause. And it had the effect of, I'm going to say galvanizing, that may be too strong a word, but really encouraging people, the Northerners, to feel that they had a moral ground from which to fight, that they had something really honorable to fight for. Because, you know, of course it was about slavery, that war, but it wasn't so explicit. You know, it was explicitly about, I don't know, states' rights or something, and whether you could secede or not. But this made it clear. And as I imagine you know, the Emancipation Proclamation only freed slaves in the states of the Confederacy. There's quite a list of those to whom it applies, because he lists the states, but also apparently there were counties, another, so it was Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, except the parishes of St. Bernard. I don't know how they would pronounce it, Plaquemines, I don't know, Plaquemines. Anyway, Jefferson, St. John, St. Charles, St. James, Assumption, Terrebonne, La Fourche, St. Mary, St. Martin, and Orleans, including the city of New Orleans. I guess the slaves in those places were not freed. And the slaves in the kind of border states that did not join the Confederacy and were still slave states, those slaves were not freed by this Emancipation Proclamation. They were not freed until the 13th Amendment passed. And yet, Lincoln said, after he had signed it, he said, this is, I'm absolutely sure that I did the right thing. And he, I don't want to make this about Abraham Lincoln, and I don't know if you've read any of the biographies of Team of Rivals is a good one, or the movie Lincoln for that matter. He evolved, you know, he wasn't particularly anti-slavery, and then he decided that what should happen is that they should all the Black people should go back to Africa and be supported in some way to do that. And he came to understand that was unrealistic. Because, I mean, it's so hard to believe that there are a lot of people within that group of Black people, a lot of people who loved this country. They loved the idea of freedom. They knew, they'd heard about it, they knew about it. Some of them took the Underground Railroad. The people were joyous, really joyous, all over the place. So, you know, there were abolitionists that were pissed off. But eventually they too felt glad. And if you saw the movie Lincoln, you remember that he talked to some Black soldiers at one point, and they were former slaves, those guys that he talked to. He said, the transcript of the proclamation is kind of long, and it has a lot of wherefores and whereases, and it's like one of those You know, they teach you to give a talk and you're supposed to say, this is what I'm going to say. Now I'm saying it. This is what I said, you know, and it reads like that. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to read that part to you. Now, therefore, I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, by virtue of the power in me vested as Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States, in time of actual armed rebellion against the authority and government of the United States, and as a fit and necessary war measure for suppressing said rebellion, do, on this first day of January in the year of our Lord, 1863, and in accordance with my purpose so to do, publicly proclaimed for the full period of 100 days from the day first above mentioned, order and designate as the states and parts of states wherein the people thereof respectively are this day in rebellion against the United States, the following, to wit, and then there's a long list. There are other states with counties that are accepted. By virtue of the power and for the purpose aforesaid, I do order and declare that all persons held as slaves within said designated states and parts of states are, and henceforth shall be free, and that the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authorities thereof, will recognize and maintain the freedom of said persons. And I hereby enjoin upon the people so declared to be free, to abstain from all violence unless in necessary self-defense. And I recommend to them that in all cases when allowed, they labor faithfully for reasonable wages. And I further declare and make known that such persons of suitable condition will be received into the armed service of the United States to garrison forts, positions, stations, and other places, and to man vessels of all sorts in said first service. And upon this act, sincerely believed to be an act of justice, warranted by the Constitution upon military necessity, I invoke the considerate judgment of mankind and the gracious favor of Almighty God. So that's what he said. No end. Shorthand, I think you're taught. I believe I was taught in elementary school that the Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves. Well, some, you know, the war was going on, and it was not a foregone conclusion that the North was going to win that war. And it was a great service to the nation that Charles Adams, the son of presidents, the father of Henry Adams, that he was the ambassador to England and he managed to keep England out of the war because England would have entered on the side of the South because England wanted its cotton. We should know this. This is our history. And it's complicated, just like we're complicated. The world is complicated. And we say, I want to be a bodhisattva and let go of all attachment and be completely useful and compassionate without even feeling separation. Well, okay. And I want to see clearly. And so knowing something about this proclamation and where it came from and what it came out of, you know, we say that we want to be like a lotus in muddy water, that we grow out of muddy water. Well, this grew out of muddy water. And it's worthy of celebration. And it may have changed the course of the war. It certainly contributed to it. Contributed to changing the course of the war. And it's celebrated on this day, on Juneteenth, sometimes called Emancipation Day, Jubilee Day, all these wonderful names. And now it's a national holiday. And it is celebrated and should be celebrated. And, you know, the reason it's not celebrated on January 1, which is when the proclamation was proclaimed, is, I think, two reasons. There's a wonderful article by, I'm not going to read it, but a man named John Hope Franklin. He was a famous African-American scholar. I think he taught at Harvard. And he really puts it in context. It was written in 1993. So why not celebrate it on January 1st? You know, of course, the war wasn't over yet, you know. The war went on for, what, another year and a half or something? But he points out, too, that, you know, one, that this kind of language doesn't do it for us. You know, in terms of the emotion, we know the Declaration of Independence much better than we know the Constitution. And it's partly that this Jefferson's language. He described the Constitution as a Hamilton's drafting by committee. And I don't know about you, but that my experience of such things is it doesn't go well if you care about words and language. So maybe this didn't really do it for people so much. What happened, it did. And so Juneteenth celebrates June 19th, when the war was of 65, when the war was pretty much over. And now I'm forgetting the general's name, General Granger, said, on when he entered Texas. Texas apparently was sort of like, really was the Wild West. They just didn't pay that much attention to Texas. And Texas was involved with the war, and it was in the Confederacy, but I guess not deeply engaged. So General Granger's first order of business was to read to the people of Texas, which was in Galveston. I mean, that's where he was. General Order Number 3, which began most significantly with, "The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free." What must that feel like? All slaves are free. And for a lot of people, they didn't know. I mean, the white folks that had access to telegraphs probably knew, but they weren't about to tell. All slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired laborer. And people were happy. And they celebrated, and that's what today is about, of both remembering and celebrating. I don't know if you've seen the pictures on the news of Ms. Lee, I can't remember her first name, the woman who was burned, she was 12 years old when her family was burned out of their home. They're African Americans, and they integrated a white neighborhood, and they were told by their realtor that it wouldn't be a problem. Well, it was a big problem. And she became a teacher. She became an activist for recognizing Juneteenth. And it was on Juneteenth that they got burned out of their house. And she was there when President Biden signed the bill into law, however you say that. She was there. I don't know if you saw it. He went as part of, first, I think Kamala Harris spoke, and then recognized this woman, and who is 93, I think, something like that. And then Biden went over to her. She was sitting there. They had a bunch of people sitting there, as they often do for these signing ceremonies. And she was sitting in the front row, and he went over and he knelt in front of her and took both of her hands and said something to her. I don't know what it was. Appreciating her. And of course, she was there at the literal signing. You know, when they take a pen and they go, boop, and then they give the pen away, boop. So finally, she must feel that. Finally, she did like big long walks for freedom for Juneteenth and so on. She led marches. This amazing woman. And it celebrated, you may know, with red drinks. Like red zinger tea, which is hibiscus, is the red color. But especially because these are based in South, I understand it's very sweet. Mm. But at any rate, red teas and other red drinks, and red is a wonderful symbolic color of liberation, but also of blood, as in blood, sweat, and tears. And a lot of people celebrate with red and gold and green foods, because those are sort of the Pan-African colors. And gold could be yams, could be cornbread, could be both, and all kinds of greens, especially collard greens. And red drinks, or red beans. And celebrate, some people don't celebrate it at all. I think now, I don't know what's changing in this country. I don't know where we're going. But certainly there's much more attention now to racial disparities and inequities and suffering. So we'll see. But it certainly, Juneteenth has gotten a lot more attention in the last year or so. So maybe Vallejo will finally honor it, because we haven't. So far, we usually have a sesshin on this day. And I remember worrying that there might be a huge Juneteenth celebration down on the waterfront, and called whoever, there's like, you call the Chamber of Commerce or something to find out. And they said, oh, no. Turned out, of course, that was the Pirate Day. But they're not doing it this year. So we'll see what happens next year if it's back. But at any rate, maybe we'll have one now. But we can celebrate it. And we are celebrating it today by sitting still and being quiet. And be aware that we're all white. Or close enough. And where practice again comes in is about not white people, we should acknowledge our privilege and so on. There's a whole other lecture. about what Asians suffer. Asians are often kind of forgotten, not these days, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, but the often like, oh, you're the model minority, so you don't have problems, which is ridiculous. But we're talking about Juneteenth. So what I want to say is that it's not useful to beat yourself up about it. In other words, it's our practice is to not ignore it, but it's also to not, I'm trying not to say wallow, but not to entangle yourself in it, or not to let yourself get entangled. That's not useful. To feel whatever pain you feel. I do. I'm feeling a lot of pain. I've been, you know, I've been watching the Underground Railroad. I read the Underground Railroad, and seeing how much hate there is in this country now, right now, directed a lot against Asian Americans. But at any rate, it hurts. It hurts, and it should hurt. And my practice is to not allow myself to be pulled around by that and enraged by it or act out in some way or give up or turn into a puddle. Or I could go on and on, I'll stop. But it's sitting still right in the middle of it and allowing it to wash through you. I always say that people get so tired of this. Let it arise, abide, pass away. And knowing what we know, I still think today is a day of celebration, and what better way to celebrate than to be quiet. And then tonight we can, maybe we'll have hibiscus tea. I think we have some. We have tea later. So there's a couple of minutes. Does anybody have any questions or anything to add? Did you explain?
Yeah, I'm going to take a couple pictures of Mary because today's our first day back in a year and whatever.
Yeah, it's our Jubilee Day.
Let me just see it.
Strike a pose, Mary.
What?
Strike a pose. Yeah.
You get your flaming torches.
This one. Yeah, that's supposed to be a flame.
Yeah.
I think it looks like blood.
It does look like blood.
Yeah.
Does someone have a question?
You said something about arising, abiding, and letting something fall away.
Yes.
Can you just talk about that whole concept? I mean, just in general, or yes. Use this example specifically.
Yeah, well, if you've felt hurt by somebody or some experience, and you knew that somebody hurt your feelings, but it was just all in your head, and you just carry it around, and you never let it actually arise, you know, completely in your body. You didn't cry or cringe or whatever, you know, your physical reaction would be. If you do allow it to completely arise and really, and hurt, really, it hurts when you get hurt, when your feelings get hurt. It hurts. And for many of us, the impulse is to cry or to feel some pain. And if we can allow that experience to completely arise and not just in our heads, then it can go. And if we don't allow it to arise, it tends to fester. And we may well act out and be mean in response. Or, you know, rather than go to the person and say, ouch, we go to them and say, fuck you. So I have an example which is pretty easy, I think. I was cooking for guests at Tassajara many years ago. And I was supposed to be cooking dinner, which meant I was due in the kitchen at 1. And I went in the morning to check on something. And the head of the kitchen, the Tenzo, and I got into some little, very little spat. I don't know. She said something. I don't know. But I it was worthy of about this. My answer. Anyway, it was worthy of about this, you know, 4 inches. And I walked out of the kitchen and I was 1 yard upset. And I knew that it wasn't about what had just happened. It wasn't about her. That was my stuff somehow. But I just knew it in my head. I remember for the rest of the morning, and as I started cooking in the afternoon, I would sort of chuckle to myself every so often about how upset I was over something so minor. And that I knew that it was something, it was mine and not hers. But I didn't feel it in my body. I didn't experience it. And then I took a break and I was walking up some stone steps and I tripped and I hit my knee and I ripped my faded old jeans. And neither one bad, it wasn't horrible, but I bumped my knee. And I just burst out crying and I was sobbing and walking up. I was going to take a break, up sort of out of the way, the main guest area. And I just sobbed and sobbed. And I knew that was my feeling, the hurt that I had felt that morning, and that it had to do with ancient tangled family karma. That I had, until I let it completely express itself, arise, I couldn't let it go. And then after I cried for a couple of minutes, you know, I just felt so much lighter and it was gone. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So could the third step be forgiveness?
The third step is whatever it is. I mean, there's not a rule. It's not a rule and it's not a formula. It's about being willing to be with, present, express, feel physically whatever is going on with you. And so once you've let it go, I mean, because it may be that you need to apologize to somebody, but you can't let, you're still so pissed, you know, you can't let it go. And then eventually you do work it through and it does pass away. And it may well be that then you can really apologize and just say, I'm sorry, I was rude. I'm sorry you felt that way. Or, I'm sorry I was rude, but you were. All that. So that's,
yeah.
We need to stop it.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable.